Too much regret, too much time wasting, accumulating. I am so tired of taking and taking, so I'm throwing it down, throwing it down. Look, Ma, no hands, and got my feet on the ground.
Jingles have been used to sell products for as long as there were commercials, but they were used to sell candidates even before that. In our first story of the show, Alyssa Morales and Wesley Lim trace the history of campaign songs from the 19th century to Billy Ray Cyrus.
This jangly little piece of music isn't just any country song. It's the song that won an election. Or rather, was used by the winner of an election.
The farmers rise up every morning and fight. The truckers drive them 18-wheelers all night.
We pay the taxes, we pay the bills, so they better pay attention up on Capitol Hill, is later sung in this piece, aptly titled, We the People. It's an everyman type song, jammed with catchphrases like, the buck stops here, and a list of blue-collar jobs that the song says run this country. But toe-tapping qualities aside, there's another reason why this song is important. This song was used by the Bush for President campaign during the 2000 election. Gaggingly patriotic, it was written by Billy Ray Cyrus. Yes, the same Billy Ray Cyrus of Achy Breaky Heart fame.
Here's to every salesman on the telephone line, and every waitress working hard for those guys.
Bush's campaign was dogged by missteps in an attempt to find a campaign song. Artists complained about their music being used, and at one event, they accidentally played the song Cats in the Cradle, a song about a son making the same mistakes as his father. The Bush staff had compiled a CD of potential songs, but as time passed, the staff would mark a black X next to those they couldn't play. Their choices became few, and We the People was one that was not recalled. Campaign blunders aren't new. President Taft once used a song called Get on the Raft with Taft. The irony is often pointed out that because Taft was a large individual, well over 300 pounds, any raft with Taft in it could not have supported too many other men. Mistakes aside, campaign songs have been used for a long time to much success. While today they are an unrecognized component of the political campaign machine, they are a carefully calculated part of a politician's image, and have been since the days of Jefferson. As long as there have been elections, there have been songs to sing the praises of the candidates. The first election for which there are actual campaign songs is thought to be the 1800 race between Thomas Jefferson and the incumbent John Adams.
The gloomy night before us flies, the reign of terror now is o'er. No gags, inquisitors, and spies, the herds of harpies are no more.
Rejoice. This is a modern rendition of the song that Jefferson used when he and Adams campaigned for the presidency. The first time the two campaigned against one another, Jefferson won the popular vote, but Adams won the Electoral College by 3. 4 years later, Jefferson was able to spread the word on his character through these songs, and he prevailed, securing himself the win both with the people and in the Electoral College.
While some on rights and some on wrongs prefer their own reflections, the people's rights demand our song, the right of free elections, law and order.
At this time in history, literacy could not be guaranteed, and there was no popular cheap method of mass communication, other than word of mouth. So in order to woo the nation, candidates would inform their constituents with song. The popular method was to use songs whose melodies the masses were already familiar with. Just change the words to praise the candidates. Drinking songs, dancing jigs, and ballads were often the base of campaign songs for the first 100 years of elections. That made the songs easy to remember and connected the candidates to the voters. Initially, Campaign songs were about character. Many of these candidates were professionals who had overcome social hardships to get to where they were. Someone like Andrew Jackson, for instance, came from the mountain wilderness and had to work hard for his education. Yet his song, like those of his peers, spoke nothing of this side of the candidate. Instead, they focused only on character and citizenship. There are three ways that a candidate displays his character for the public. First was to show the candidate as an upstanding military champion.
Rum-a-dum-dum, vote for Taylor, rum-a-dum-dum, son of freedom, rum-a-dum-dum, vote for Taylor, he's the boy can skate.
This catchy little tune belongs to Zachary Taylor. It's an example of parading a military victory in a triumphant campaign song.
He met him on the Rio Grande, he played them Yankee Doodle Dandy. When brave Taylor crossed the line, he made them snort like a steam engine.
This is one of the most common themes in early campaign music, because these songs said that I won battles, I am successful, let me remind you of the patriotic moment when I helped America win. The lyrics showcased that this was the type of person who had a winning character and would bring that to the office of the president. And for those who didn't fight in wars, there's the fire and brimstone method. John Quincy Adams is what's a-coming, the sixth president in the United States. This is the type of song that explains what you'll be getting if you don't elect this person.
Fire's coming, swords are coming, pistols, guns, and knives are coming, famine's coming, famine's coming, if John Quincy not be coming.
Plague and pestilence is a-coming, Satan's a-coming, if John Quincy not be coming. Those are pretty strong accusations against Adams' opponent. It implies that he was really going to screw up this country. But we were lucky, as Adams was elected and kept the plague at bay. That brings us to the last type of campaign song, and the one most familiar to today's listeners, mudslinging campaigns.
Rock-a-bye, baby.
This is a song from the campaign of the 8th president, Martin Van Buren. Seems quaint enough, no? Listen to this part.
When he has swag, he'll fall in a stew. And down will come Tyler and Tippecanoe.
That's slander right there. Van Buren is liking his opponent, William Henry Harrison, to a drunkard. It's a base move on the part of a future president.
You awake. You will discover Tip is a fake.
But don't feel too bad for Harrison. The mudslinging wasn't one-sided, as one of Harrison's songs featured the line, "Who moves at Satan's beck and nod, who heeds not man, who heeds not God, Van Buren." While those words did not win him the election the first go-round, Harrison would win 4 years later and become the president with the shortest known term in office, only 30 days long. Until the beginning of the last century, the military victory, fire and brimstone, and muckslinging were the three basic types of songs that were used. Some of the candidates would use a few of these ideas at once, but the effect was still the same. They stood to show that these candidates were good, patriotic citizens worthy of your vote. And they are effective. These themes can even be seen in the campaign commercials of today's candidates. The art of the campaign song changed in the early part of the last century as a new way to spread news became popular.
Days are over and election time is near. From east and west, from north to south, there's just one name in every mouth when a fellow.
With the invention of radio, suddenly a candidate's message could reach anyone in the country quickly. Did you notice the ukulele accompaniment to this song?
It's a Wilson, that's all. Wilson, that's all.
The ukulele was a novel instrument that was appearing in popular music of this time. Campaign songs now began to go for the masses in a different manner. Rather than reusing a melody, they appealed to popular culture.
We need a man to guide us, who'll always be beside us. A man who will...
This song belongs to President Number 29, Warren G. Harding. It was written for Harding's campaign by Al Jolson. Jolson's name may sound familiar. He was a popular entertainer of the day, and was the voice of the first talkie, the jazz singer.
The GOP, Harding, on to victory. We're here to make a fuss. Warren Harding, you're the man for us.
From this time on, names like famous composer Irving Berlin and folk music hero Woody Guthrie entered the campaign music game. While songs had sounded mostly the same for the first century or so, during the 20th century, they began to rapidly evolve, just as media itself was changing.
So it's Harding, lead the GOP, Harding, on to victory. We're here to make a fuss. Warren Harding, you're the man for us. Warren Harding, you're the man for us.
The themes of the songs were changing as well. Instead of saying what an upstanding citizen a candidate was, the song went for simple catchiness. Eisenhower's song, for example, repeated his slogan, "I like Ike," over and over again. And Lyndon Johnson's song was based off his love for the musical Hello Dolly, called, appropriately, Hello Lyndon.
Hello, Lyndon. Well, hello, Lyndon. We'd be proud to have you back where you belong.
The campaign song had evolved to become background music, a jingle, touting the popularity and personableness of the man. Jonah Berger, a doctoral student in marketing at the Stanford School of Business, explains it this way.
If you're in a political campaign and you say, and then I'm for reducing your taxes, then that's a message that people can either believe or not. And so when people are trying to be convinced of something, they tend to counter-argue. So if you tell me that you want me to believe something, I'm going to have a little bit of reactance and not really want to go along with what you're saying, and I'm going to think of counter-arguments. Whereas if you play me a song or something like that, that kind of slips in a little more peripherally.
Candidates now had TV and print news to campaign. They had televised debates, pamphlets, stump speeches, and commercials. The need for a song to spread the word about a candidate wasn't nearly as imperative as it had been for the first presidents. The last known song written specifically for a campaign was the ballad "Why Not the Best" for Jimmy Carter.
Just to listen to what he had to say. He spoke straight and simple. By that I was impressed, he said. Once and for all, why not the best?
Due to his bad public image and unfortunate political climate, Carter would stay in office only one term. So the next president saw a new decade and a new approach to campaign songs.
Made a lot of sense. He talked about the government and how it used to be for you and me. That's the way it ought to be. Right now, once and for all, why not the best?
When Reagan was running for re-election 20 years ago, his campaign said that he was a Bruce Springsteen fan and chose the patriotic anthem Born in the USA off of Springsteen's latest album to campaign.
Born in the USA, I was born in the USA, I was born in the USA.
The only problem that arose was that neither he nor his campaign actually listen to the rest of the song.
The first kicker took us when I hit the ground. End up like a dog that's been beat to
Born in the USA is actually about the mistreatment of returning Vietnam veterans in America. It's more of an anti-system song than pro-government. In other words, a different type of patriotic anthem than what Reagan would have liked or wanted. Reagan was going in the right direction. He was attempting to reach an audience through music. He understood that Springsteen appealed to a certain population, namely the working class, and that by playing Springsteen's music, he might reach them. Reagan's only failing in that logic was to first reach the working class through his policies before trying to state that he was one of them through music. Jonah Berger explained.
They'll probably pick a song that goes after a particular demographic, but so it may have differing effects on different groups. So I think a good example of that is if you looked at some recent commercials. Some marketers are really trying to appeal to kids, right? So you'll see there's an ad for Bagel Bites. It's like, yeah, stuff your face with Bagel Bites. Oh, yeah, the rad thing to do. And as a sort of savvy consumer, you look at that and say, Bagel Bites aren't rad. You know, these people are trying to sell me Bagel Bites by, you know, taking on my language. So if there's that sort of disconnect, I think there might definitely be a backlash.
Being the Teflon president that he was, Reagan won the 1984 election, despite the musical faux pas. And he also set the precedent of using established songs, lyrics unaltered, to campaign. The shining example of this happened in 1992. The Clinton campaign was about defying the traditional whistle-stop campaign tour. He appeared on MTV and late-night talk shows. Clinton made himself accessible to popular culture, and in doing so, became popular culture himself. As his campaign song, Clinton chose the 1974 Fleetwood Mac classic, Don't Stop. With the chorus of Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow, It Will Soon Be Here, it echoed his platform of looking towards the future, the millennium, and as icing to the cake, the easy listening song appealed to the baby boomers, embracing them in the campaign as much as Clinton was embracing the MTV generation. Jonah Berger.
One way definitely that people talk about memory to get people to remember things is we all know, you know, songs we like. And so one, every time you hear that song on the radio, you're going to be cued to think of the new song. So if it's a popular song now, you know, if it's Yankee Doodle Dandy or whatever, and it's on the radio, but if I hear someone saying that, I'm going to think of the politician who associated themselves with it.
That is the appeal of campaign songs now. They're targeting people's emotions and memories. Commercials and magazine interviews will tell you what a candidate is like. Music is how they get you to remember who they are. So that leads us to the here and now. The Democratic frontrunner, Kerry, has often used a Bruce Springsteen song at events. Kerry is mirroring Reagan's 1984 attempt with music by playing a song from the Born in the USA album. But instead of playing the title track, he's using No Surrender. It's a nice tune about being strong and resilient, and vaguely hints at Kerry's military past, with the refrain of, like soldiers in winter's nights, with vows to defend, no retreat, baby, no surrender. But so as not to alienate the generation who might not know Bruce Springsteen as the boss, Kerry's campaign has also played Tom Petty and U2's A Beautiful Day. The modern trend in campaign songs is to not have a campaign song, rather, to have a few. This summer, Bush is playing selections from Good Old Boy Toby Keith, along with Eye of the Tiger, of Rocky Music fame. The songs stand to help bridge the gap between the candidate and the people, providing something familiar for the people to connect with. The image of a candidate is tightly calculated. Last year, early in campaigning, a flag pin fell off of Kerry's lapel, but without missing a beat, his campaign manager was there, fishing an identical pin out of a bag full of them. And during the 2000 election, Bush's communication director, Karen Hughes, could be seen mouthing the words to Bush's speech as he delivered them, in a creepy sort of ventriloquist act. There are now multiple mediums through which information can be transmitted. Modern-day candidates have commercials, web ads, and even internet blogs, and the image of the candidate is controlled through all those mediums. Today, music is used in a very subtle manner in campaigns. Most people are totally unaware of these songs' existence, and unaware of how they are affected by them. The use of campaign songs has changed as media in America has changed. The music has moved from being jingles with recognizable tunes to carefully chosen songs that express a position or a demographic that the candidate wants to reach. The change in these songs can also be read as a sign of the change in how candidates want to be understood. For the first 100 years or so, candidates wanted to be seen as patriotic citizens, saviors of the young country, and protectors of democracy. Today, that is stated in a much less blatant manner, and their music speaks of being an average, everyday American citizen, just like you or me. And while the use is subtle today, it is by no means less effective than when Jefferson first used his song.
Alyssa Morales and Wesley Lim are recent Stanford graduates.